Canto 30. When Semele was loved by Jupiter, and Juno raged because of it, and shook the house of Thebes to make it kneel to her time after time, Athamas could not brook her anger and went mad. And when he saw his wife go by, weighed down on either side with their two children, he cried, "Tooth and claw! Let's spread the nets and capture all the pride, the lioness and both the cubs as they go by." And he himself had claws that grasped one child, Lyrcus, whirling him away to dash him on a rock. She, while she clasped the other child, escaped, but just to drown. And then when fortune laid the Trojans low from their great loftiness and brought them down from where they once dared all and spurned them so that king and kingdom both lay in the dust, sad Hecuba, forlorn, enslaved, when she saw Polyxena dead, and knew that must be Polydorus on the beach, though he was hard to recognize, quite lost her mind for grief, and like a dog she barked. But no fury that fell on Thebes or Troy could find a place, no matter whom it struck, and though it tore up beasts and limbs of men, next to the cruelty that now I saw. Two pale and naked shades ran as a hog might do, loosed biting from the sty, one to assail Capocchio. Sharp fangs sunk in his next nape. It dragged him and his scabs along the ditch, whose hard floor made his itchy belly scrape. Then Grifolino, left to look and twitch beside me, said, "That goblin in a rage is Giannichicchi, and he deals with all that way, himself the great fraud of his age." And I to him, "So it may not befall the other one should fix its teeth in you before it makes off, tell me who it is." And he to me, "The shade of Mira, who was by her father, as if she was his by law made concubine. She joined the sin, pretending she was someone else, as that one there who goes off took the whole world in, to get the horse that everyone aimed at, the lady of the stud. He took the name and style of Buoso di Donati, made the will, and then to prove his wily fame, faked Buoso's death in bed. Such was the trade of Giannichicchi, and his lasting shame. A mimic. May his lustre never fade." And when those two on whom I'd kept my eyes in all their fury had at last moved on, I turned to all those ill-born others. Prize exhibit among those was one upon whom fingers might have played. He was a lute, or would have been if cut short at the groin from that part where a man is forked, acute dropsy, by which the members cease to join in just proportion, humors are disposed the wrong way, and the belly answers not the face, decreed his lips were never closed, much like the rabid one whose thirst runs hot, so one lip curls down always to the chin, the other upward. "You that walk here free from any kind of punishment for sin through this grim world, how such a thing could be, who knows? But look, give heed now to the grief of Master Adam. While alive, I had all that I wished, but now know no relief from thirst for just one drop of water. Mad, the mere thought makes me of the little streams that from green hills of Casentino flow down to the Arno, channels like sweet dreams run cool and wet before me, and are no frivolity, for just their image seems to parch me worse than all the ills that waste my features. The unbending justice which examines me and makes me breathe in haste starts up there where I sinned, not in this ditch. There, in Romena, where I falsified the coin stamped with the Baptist, and for that I left my body up there when I died, all burned. But even if I could be at my dearest Fonte Branda, I would give that chance for only one glimpse of the three brothers who got me into it. Two live. There's Alessandro and that other one. For me, the one who counts is Guido, and he's here already, if those angry shades who run around this ring speak truth. Why would he fear me, though? My limbs imprison me. Just 1 inch in 100 years. if I were just that light. I would have set out on the road to find him among all these misshapes. Trust my promise, though I'd have to haul my load 11 miles around and more than half a mile across. But through them, here I am. I made the golden coin a golden calf. Our florin, pride of Florence, was a sham, minted by me. 3 carats of hardware to drain its worth. And I to him. Those 2 poor wretches lying near your border there, who give off smoke the same way wet hands do in winter, who are they? And he, you care? I found them when I reined into this trough. They didn't move then, and they haven't since, nor will they stir unless my guess is off for all eternity. You'd think she'd wince, at least, that lying wife of Potiphar, who did for Joseph. Sinon is the Greek who fooled the Trojans, and now here they are, a pair of fatal fabulists. That reek comes from their burning fever. Then Sinon, who took it ill, perhaps, that he had come to be so scorned, punched his accuser on his paunch of leather, which boomed like a drum, and Master Adam struck him in the face with his huge arm. His punch seemed no less hard, saying, although my limbs keep me in place by their great weight, still I am not debarred in such a case from having one arm loose. Sinon replied, when you went to the fire, you hadn't, but you had it free for use when striking false coin. All you could require of strength you had then, so that's no excuse. The dropsied one said, in this you speak true. But nothing that you said was true in Troy, where simple truth was all they asked of you, a guest they had made welcome and with joy. If I spoke falsely, said Sinon, the fault was mine just once. You, with your lying coins, struck many times. You kept up an assault that earns you, more than anyone who joins us here, a place of honor. Thus addressed, he of the paunch replied, the horse! The horse! Remember, perjurer, the way you pressed your wooden gift on them and let remorse plague you that all the world has come to know? And you be plagued, the Greek said, with the thirst that cracks your tongue, and with that liquid so corrupt it swells your gut into the first thing that you see, a hedge before your eyes. The counterfeiter then. Thus your mouth gapes to set you wrong, and never otherwise. I thirst, yes, and foul humor cruelly shapes my belly so that it attains this size, but you have burning fever, your head aches, and you would need small urging to lick dry the mirror of Narcissus. All it takes is just to say it's made of water. I was all absorbed in listening, but then my master said, you keep this up much more, and I will lose my patience with you. When I heard him speak, it shook me to the core. He was so angry, and with so much shame, I turned towards him that it haunts me still in memory. My thoughts were just the same as in one of those dreams when something ill is being done to you, and in the dream you wish it were a dream, so that you long for that which is as if it weren't, and seem to see yourself afraid, and you are not wrong. Just so, I felt I'd lost the power to speak from wanting to excuse myself, and yet excused myself until my voice grew weak, repeating all I hoped he would forget. Much greater faults than yours are washed away by much less shame, my master said. Unload your heart of all grief. I am here today and always at your side on the long road, to tell you, if by chance you're led astray by people in a quarrel, that the wish to listen while they fight is devilish.